第四章。Do all the members who walked in now got copies of the report? Do you have copies of the report? You do. Glynis, you got copies of the report.
Thank you.
I don't have to take a special copy for you.
Okay.
All right. Good morning, everybody. This morning we had a closed session with the Auditor General and the Interim Board. The intention was not to hide anything from the public, but really to get members of the committee to familiarize themselves with what is a weighted report. The presentation that was given, that was presented to us this morning, is the same thing that will be presented in this forum. So there is not a word that will be kept back. It's meant to be an open and transparent exercise. We've agreed also that the report will be made public. So they will be on the parliamentary website, hopefully by this afternoon, on the Auditor General's website, by midday today. So these will be publicly accessible documents. We will also hand over copies of the report in the course of today to the President and Deputy President, because they represent the appointing authority, certainly to the Minister and Deputy Minister of Communications as a shareholder, and also to the Speaker and Deputy Speaker of Parliament, because they manage this institution. I think when we started the inquiry into the former SABC board, we realized that there were problems in the executive management. I think we had an inkling that things were not properly managed there. But I think from the briefing that we've received this morning, at least in my estimation, and other members might want to express their own views later on, but I think we have before us really a monumental failure of the executive management around financial controls and management at the SABC. I think we had a gut feeling also that the rot had set in. But I must say that this morning when we got the briefing, I was shocked at the extent of the rot. And I think it behoves Parliament, the Interim Board, the shareholder, and the AG's office to work collaboratively over the next few months to try and clean out the system, to flush it out, so that you have a managerial system of integrity and credibility, and that the public can be confident that the finances and the institution of the corporation is managed properly. I don't think we are going to see this matter concluded in the next week or two. It's quite clear that there will have to be follow-up action, all sorts of follow-up action, whether it is disciplinary, administrative, managerial, corporate governance, etc. But I think from the committee side, we are committed to seeing this process to its logical conclusion till the end. We will be failing in our duty as Parliament if we don't see this process through. So it's a beginning of restoring faith in the public trust and credibility of the system. That's really what we think this should be about. So with those few introductory comments, I'm going to then call upon the Auditor General to present the report. There's a big team from the office. They'll introduce everybody that's here. And immediately after that, we'll get a response from the Interim Board. We do, however, have some time constraints. We're going to have to adjourn this session at 10:30 at the latest, because there is a caucus that we've got to attend. But we will reconvene at 12 o'clock to continue with the business of the meeting. So at 10:30, whatever it is, whoever is speaking, I'm going to have to cut you short. I know it might be impolite, but somehow there's a special caucus that has been convened at short notice, so we're going to have to rush from there. But we'll come back at 12 o'clock and continue with the business of the meeting. Mr. Mehmet, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity to present this special report on the SABC investigation. The scope, Chair, of the coverage of this report was informed by the request that emerged from this committee, which request offers to cover allegations relating to three areas. That is the supply chain management, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as some human resource management practices. Indeed, we have responded to that request, which required of us to report back to this committee on this day. And the time has indeed been very tight, and hence our selection of the areas that we went through in detail has been very, very important for us in order to come back to this committee with something comprehensive and much more relevant, as well as chewable for the committee to take action on the way forward. And with regard to these areas, I just want to state also up front that the issues that we may not have covered specifically in terms of the allegations, we have got a firm belief that the underlying reasons for some of the practices would have, in our view, been adequately covered to deal with the issues that we may not have specifically reviewed in terms of the allegations that we are requested to look at. The other issue, Chair, that perhaps is important for us to cite is that in conducting this review, there's been extensive engagement and consultation and confirmation of the facts with at least those that could confirm the facts. Specifically, the management and senior management team, the previous board, the interim board, the current acting group chief executive, and the senior executives that are there within the corporation, as well as the previous group chief executive. So there's been a wide range of consultation to confirm the credibility of the findings that we have been able to pick up during this review. And in terms of the essence of this review, we have come up with areas, three of them, that we believe have been the underlying driver of the findings that we picked up. And these areas are linked to the corporate governance principles that we believe should and ought to be observed all the time in the running of any entity, including government entities. The first one is about the importance of the quality of management information that needs to be presented to the leadership in order for leadership to take decisive action and the right actions for the benefit of the entity. And in this respect, there were a lot of shortcomings in the ability of the corporation to produce information that meets this criteria of quality management information and reporting of the activities of the corporation in terms of whatever statutes or prescripts inform the operations of the corporation. The second area is about the good governance arrangements or support that needs to be made available and operate effectively in order for the corporation to have any warning signals on matters that could undermine the operations of the organization. And in this respect, we make reference to the effectiveness of the audit committees, effectiveness of internal audit, effectiveness of the risk management structures, whose primary responsibility is to provide the necessary early warning signals for leadership to take decisive action on those matters. The third and the last issue relates to the reaction and the response of leadership when information is put in front of leadership oversight in terms of what action then is instituted to deal with those issues that are large and known and require action by the leadership. And in this respect, once again, we have picked up a situation where, with regard to the leadership oversight, there were shortcomings that needed to be attended to in terms of the action and the reaction of the leadership on those issues that have been brought to the attention of the leadership. So those are the issues that underpinned our analysis of the issues as we have picked them up. Now, specific to the areas that have been put before us to evaluate and review, supply chain management, I'll start with that one, and I'll go through the others in that order, in the order of the sequence: supply chain management, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as human resources. But the bulk of the comments I will make would relate mainly to supply chain management, because this is where the bulk of the risks exist insofar as the corporation is concerned, which will naturally overflow in terms of consequence and impact on how that translates into the regularity and the wastefulness of the expenditure that may have been informed by the execution and adherence to those supply chain management practices. With regard to supply chain management, the fundamental issues that we picked up relate to the fact that prior to 2007 October, there wasn't any formal policy that existed within the corporations to regulate the procurement activities. But having approved a policy which we found to be very useful and very progressive in October 2007, we found that policy ready to be an important document that needed to be adhered to. So prior to that, one would have expected that at least compliance with the prescripts of the Treasury guidelines that are up to date, Public Finance Management Act, which was promulgated quite a while ago, would have been the norm in the absence of a policy that would have been formalized. But nevertheless, having had the policy in place in October 2007, what we did pick up was the fact that that policy itself was to a large extent not adhered to by the people that were expected to adhere to it, which is, to a large extent, is the senior management and executives of the corporation. And the incidents laid out in the report that point out specific issues that we did review and investigate that point out to that effect. And Pramesh Bana will take us through those incidents one by one. But I just want to highlight the fact that the underlying issue here is the fact that the adherence to a very good policy and practices is what was a norm which needed to and needs to be corrected insofar as the corporation is concerned. And the implications and impact of that is very dramatic and graphic insofar as the specific incidents that have been identified and reported upon. The second issue around supply chain management relates to the lack of credible management information system that will help the leadership to manage the adherence to or non-adherence to supply chain management practices in a proactive manner. And here, reference is specifically made to the system that was bought having the module that could help the corporation to do so. But that module was never switched on time. In fact, my understanding is that it's still not operative, and it's something that could, with ease, assist the corporation to move to a situation where information that is crucial to manage supply chain management issues could be available with ease. So in this respect, one just want to highlight how important it is then to have mechanisms and tools that could make this information easily available, given the size of the corporation, given the magnitude of the transactions that have got to do with the supply chain. The third issue around supply chain that is critical to highlight is the risk that exists within the corporation insofar as the conflict of interest is concerned. And this is where we talk about a situation where a vast number of employees within the corporation do have business interests outside of the corporation. We nevertheless did not go into an extended review to confirm whether those interests have materialized in terms of business that was done with the SABC, but simply highlighting this as a risk that could materialize. The only thing that we could do was to confirm that a few of those employees, about 20, did indeed have business transactions with the SABC, contrary to the prescripts and the regulations and the policies of the corporation. And it is in this respect that we're just flagging an important issue that the governance structures need to consider, in that this risk does not appear to be considered as part of the strategic risk of the corporation, in spite of the fact that it is one of the glaring risks that needs to be managed. The essence of it and the importance of it is that if you have got a vast number of employees to the tune of 1,465 having interests outside of the SABC that are related to the nature of business that the SABC is involved in, you then run the risk of having the decision-making within the corporation rather susceptible to a lot of risks. And two of those risks relate to the fact that those own interests could extend to a situation where employees could make decisions that favor rather their own interests as opposed to the interests of the corporation. And they say, we're not saying that this has materialized, but we're saying it is a risk that could materialize if it is not managed and regulated in a proper manner. And in this instance, we are saying that there is no regulatory practice to deal with this matter. There's no register, there's no information that informs on how the corporation on how it should deal with this issue. The other important aspect of this is the fact that decisions could in fact be made in the personal interest of employees instead of the sound business principles that are in the interest of the corporation. These are the risks that are valid, these are the risks that are alive, which if we are to be in a position to mitigate them, we need to have practices that assure the corporation that these risks do not stand the chance of materializing. So those are the main issues that relate to supply chain management insofar as the corporation is concerned, and perhaps in summary, just to reinforce them, they relate to the fact that there is an extensive lack of adherence to and respect of the prescripts of the procurement policies within the SABC by senior management within the corporation. Secondly, the fact that management information tools are not effective to provide information to manage issues relating to supply chain management and procurement. And thirdly, the risk that is alive in terms of the nature of the association between the employees of SABC and other interests that they do have outside of the SABC, and the lack of a practice that regulates that situation, which could result in decisions being made in the interest rather of the employees instead of in the interest of the corporation. And those are the issues that we believe, with or without the examination of the other detailed allegations that are made around supply chain management, unless these issues are dealt with and addressed at this level of articulation, many other allegations will emerge, only to find that the only reason they emerge is because there's a lack of an effective, foolproof administration and management of these risks within the corporation. With regard to issues on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the main fundamental findings there, we'll go through the details in terms of the specifics, relates to the fact that matters that are known, matters that have been reported by the internal audit and other investigations that were instituted by the SABC have in fact not been acted upon decisively or timeously at the time that they were known. And the issues relating to a high number of issues that related to expenditure being wasteful, expenditure being fruitless, ranging from duplication of payments for goods and services not received, and many other issues that are pointing to the fact that even though expenditure was made, it could have been saved if the intervention by the leadership was decisive and timeous. And it's in this respect, Chair, that with regard to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there is just an emphasis here that if we could have a situation where the leadership supervision, leadership stewardship could be decisive and timeous, we could prevent and can still prevent, I suppose, in the future some of these issues from happening, because they are unknown, they are big, they need attention. There are other instances where there are no policies that would regulate some of the expenditure within the SABC, and of note here is one specific allegation relating to the use of the petrol card system. And in this case, there are instances where the extent of usage, the patterns of usage are glaringly quite enormous, and they do require to a large extent a very clear policy, which in this case does not exist, to regulate the manner in which the petrol card usage should be governed. And it's in this respect that the ambiguity that's associated with this policy is something that needs to be cleaned out, so that the limits, the extent of the benefits could be properly regularized and monitored in terms of the patterns that could be deemed to be or perceived to be abusive of the system. Once again, it's here a question of having clear policies that would help to clarify some of the expenditure patterns that could be deemed to be wasteful and fruitless, but also to react on the specific information that is brought to the attention of the leadership to act upon. And lastly, Chair, with regard to human resources, the only area of coverage we had touched on here relates to the extent to which the disciplinary actions and suspensions that have not been finalized or brought to an end, which range from 10 to close to 39 months in some instances. And all we're saying is these are instances where, once again, the transgressions are known, and all it requires is the question of leadership to then take decisive action to deal with those issues and bring them to a close. Because to the extent that they're not brought to a close, it then breeds a culture which does not become exemplary in terms of how corporate governance should be respected and adhered to within the corporation. So these are the issues that we have highlighted, Chair. And therefore, the recommendations that we have issued have tended to lean more towards these underlying root causes of the issues, as opposed to the specific allegations, which are covered partly. Some of them are not covered. Some of them we don't even know at the moment. But all we know is that if we do deal with these issues of broad governance practice, we will be in a position to then mitigate all the risks associated with the allegations that we are facing today. I'll probably give Pramesh to just take us through in a few minutes, in the interest of the gathering, the specific allegations that we have had to cover but with the understanding, with the permission, Chair, that the underlying causes is what we should be focusing on as opposed to the specific issues that we have had to deal with.
Thank you. Thank you, AG, and thank you, Chair. Honourable members, in the interest of time, I'm really going to confine myself to some of the more significant findings that you will find reflected in our report in the executive summary, which runs from pages 3 to pages 8. Now, I think one thing to note is that the findings that I'm going to refer to cover the period September 2007 to June 2009, unless it's indicated otherwise specifically in the report. But that's primarily the time frame which we looked at transactions. Starting with supply chain management, and I think for the interest of clarity, perhaps I can just mention the established delegations of authority at the SABC, because that is fundamental to our findings. In terms of the delegations of authority framework at the SABC, anything more than 2 million rand has to go through a competitive bidding process in terms of acquisitions or procurement. But the authority does vest with group executives. Transactions or procurement within the range of 2 million rand to 7.5 million rand falls within the jurisdiction and approval authority of the bid adjudication committee of the SABC. Procurement within the range of 7.5 million rand to 15 million rand is within the delegated authority of the group executive committee. And finally, anything above 15 million rand requires the SABC board's approval. Now, bearing this in mind, as the Auditor General has mentioned, in the area of supply chain management, there are numerous instances of non-compliance with the SABC's own policy, which was implemented in October 2007. Looking at the period 2007 to 2009, there was about 51 tenders that were provided to us by the SABC. And we noted that for 7 of these tenders, for an aggregate amount of about 174 million rand, these tenders were not approved in line with the delegation of authority. Similarly, the procurement policy allows for deviations, for example, when it's emergency procurement. Now, during the same period, we have identified 9 deviations, but we've noted 2 of them related to contracts amounting to about 25 million rand, which were not approved in line with the delegations of authority. And for example, that would mean if it had to be approved by the board, it may have been approved by the adjudication committee, so a low level. And again, just another finding to amplify this point, we've also found another 2 contract awards amounting to just over 8 million rand each, which were not, again, approving in line with the delegations of authority. If we then go on to our next finding that we've highlighted in the executive summary, this relates to a very material agreement for 326 million rand, which was entered into by the former group executive, or group CEO rather, and the former head of legal and business advisory services, which co-signed an agreement with a particular consultant for 326 million in September 2006. And as I've mentioned, this is clearly an indication, and we could find no evidence to the contrary, that the board had actually approved it, because above 15 million was board approval, and in this case the agreement was by the group CEO and head of legal, so it was in contravention of the delegations of authority framework. Of course, with such a big amount, it did raise some alarm bells in the SABC, and the group internal auditors themselves had raised concerns regarding this particular contract for that amount, and they brought the matter before the board. The board itself was concerned and expressed the concern, the former board, and then asked for a legal opinion on this particular contract. Now, the specifics of the legal firm who provided opinion, the details are outlined on page 26 of the report. But in a nutshell, what it essentially comes down to is the legal firm was of the opinion that the SABC could not set aside this contract, although they indicated that this particular consultant to whom the contract was awarded had been unfairly advantaged. The legal opinion also indicated that the employees who had signed the contract had acted in contravention of the policies and delegation of approval framework, and in fact the PFMA. They also, in their opinion, expressed the view that these transgressions, which also involved other employees, needed to be pursued further because it was a specific transgression. But the details of that legal opinion are summarized on page 26 of the report. We then looked at the appointment of consultants. And in summary, we found that, once again, the procurement process is regulated by the supply chain management policy of the SAPC was not followed. With regard to these consultants that were appointed, we noted that competitive processes were not followed. Contracts were signed after the services had already commenced. Contract periods were extended without being formalized in revisions to the contracts, which is normally done by way of addendums. And payments were made for services that were not actually provided for in the contracts in the first place. There was no segregation of duties when it came to the appointment of these consultants. And by this we simply mean that the individual who had identified a need for the consulting services was also the individual who would sign off on the contract, was also the individual who would certify that the services have been rendered, also the individual who had released the purchase order that would allow for a payment to be made, and then actually also sign off on the payment. So there was no segregation of duties in our view when it came to these appointment of consultants. Also, deliverables were not specified in this contract, and in instances, the payments exceeded the contract amount. I will not touch again on the issue of the procurement policy, which was approved and implemented a number of years after the PFMA. I think the Auditor General has really covered that. But perhaps just in conclusion on this section, on this specific component of supply chain management, I should also just give another example of a perhaps failure in governance arrangements. And that is, the bid adjudication committee has to, in terms of supply chain management policy and the delegation of authority framework, consists of four senior members. Now, these senior members have to be appointed by the group CEO of the SAPC. And by the time that we had concluded on this investigation, there was no written appointment of those members of the bid adjudication committee. And honorable members, essentially, this section of findings of mention, which amounts to a non-adherence or non-compliance of the supply chain management policy and directives of delegations of authority, is defined in the PFMA as irregular expenditure, because the policies represent the regulation or directives which is emanating from an act, from a legislature, and therefore these transactions that I've referred to would be categorized as irregular expenditure. In the interest of time, I'm also not going to cover the issues related to the systems of control and information systems that have been turned off, as the AG has mentioned, because that could have been a check and balance to prevent some of these expenditures going through undetected. So let me then move on to the next section, and that is on fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure. The first issue is that, again, the group internal auditors had raised and reported deficiencies to the audit committee, which is a subcommittee of the board of the SAPC, as far back as March 2007. Now, these concerns related to the acquisition of international content. I think, as honorable members would know, international content involves quite material transactions. That is essentially the acquisition of movies, for example, or titles, and which are then broadcasted by the SABC. Now, as a result of the concerns that were raised by the group internal auditors, the board had commissioned a legal firm to undertake a comprehensive investigation, essentially, into this international acquisition. And the investigation by this legal firm commenced in August 2007 and was brought to a close in August 2009. The legal firm had investigated about 169 acquisitions, and in their report had concluded that 111.7 million rands worth of acquisition were in their view irregular. And they considered it irregular because they believe it related to double payments, overpayments, materials that were paid for but were never received by the SABC, agreements that had to be renegotiated, and program titles that were acquired more than once from the same supplier during the same license period. They went on to recommend specific actions be taken against those employees who were involved in these kind of transactions. The method that we report on that has not been brought to its logical conclusion. They have reported on this already as an interim report as far back as September 2008. So while the final report may have been August 2009, the interim report was September 2008. And since that period, until the new interim board was established, in fact, we have reported that very little has been done. If I go on to some other issues, then should I move off that particular item? There were specific allegations regarding irresponsible spending related to the Presidential Golf Day. Now, the Presidential Golf Day is an annual event that happens after the State of the Nation address. And we found that, and the SABC has indicated, that they have been involved in this annual event for a number of years, mainly from the point of view of providing coverage of the event and occasionally providing some kind of sponsorships like gifts. For the 2009 Presidential Golf Day, we found that four golf bags were provided as gifts for the event to the tune of about 2,000 rand, and airtime was provided or sponsored by the SABC to the tune of about 340,000 rand. Now, I think we should also mention that all of that 340,000 rand, let's call it sponsored airtime, it also included the normal coverage in the news broadcast. So, you know, whenever we have a news flash coming up, a news broadcast, the Presidential Golf Day would have formed part of that to the tune of about 157,000 rand. So the balance is what we would then consider as being the debatable sponsored airtime. And in terms of the SAPC's own policies, what they're required to do is to develop or submit a business plan for that kind of sponsorship, which has to be approved. This was not provided, or we could not find any evidence of that. Then the next issue relates to an agreement that the SABC has entered into with a private company. Now, the private company has been set up for the purposes of arranging commercial sports tours and packages, and which includes flights and accommodation. And they market themselves by using an SABC brand name, namely SABC Sports. And in terms of this license agreement, the SABC would be entitled to 50% of the profit of that private company before tax. What we focused on, though, is payments made by the SABC to this private company. Because what the SABC's own policy also says is that you as the SABC may not use any other travel arrangements other than as provided for by the SABC, because they have got an internal division which has got internal capacity to provide travel arrangements for all of their own employees and board members who travel for official purposes for the SABC. But during the period September 2007 to June 2009, this private company was paid about 11.3 million rand for travel arrangements that was commissioned by the SABC relating to its own affairs. Of this 11.3 million, just under 8 million was in respect of the Beijing Olympic Games and Paralympic Games. In terms of the specific travel to the Beijing Olympic Games and Paralympic Games, we found that a business plan was indeed compiled, which listed a number of invited guests, both within the SABC, outside of the SABC, former board members. And this business plan had to be approved by the board, but it was not approved by the board. It was approved by one of the group executives who had put the submission together, who also traveled to the Beijing Olympic Games. There's a spin-off issue that emanates from this particular matter, and that is some of the former, or one of the former board members, and at least two of the executive managers also were invited to travel with their partners. Now, when you travel, your employer has to levy what's called a fringe benefit tax because your partner was allowed to travel as well. But because the human resources division of the SABC was never informed about this travel, they could not levy the fringe benefit tax that accrued as a result of a former board member and executive management having traveled and their partners traveling with them, fully paid for by the SABC. So that's all, there's also tax implication that arose out of that particular matter. If I can then move on to a matter very briefly, though, that the AG already touched on, which is the excessive petrol card expenditure. I can just perhaps refer you to tables 48 to pages 48 to 50 of our report, which provides tables. Now, these tables have been compiled on the basis of a sample check of employees. The SAPC's policy allows all senior managers and top managers to a petrol card. So the petrol card is charged for expenditure that they incur on their vehicles for official purposes. Now, those tables, you will note some very excessive amounts, as the AG has referred to earlier, in individual months for individual employees. And just bear in mind that this is a sample. And when we looked at it, we found that the policy itself is perhaps inadequate in the sense that it does not establish limits for this kind of expenditure. It does not provide the criteria which would perhaps be a better reflection of who should be entitled to such petrol cards based on their official responsibilities and roles. In fact, it just allows a blanket entitlement to the petrol cards for anyone that's on senior and top management. So clearly the policy itself is lacking, and clearly there is excessive expenditure, and we're just recommending on this particular issue it requires a much further detailed review. And I know the interim board has taken a very strong position on this matter, but I'm sure that they would enlighten the honourable members about that. Perhaps lastly, just turning over to the issues of human resource related issues, and as the Auditor General has mentioned, we've done very limited work in this area, but as a result of our concerns primarily emanating from the other findings that I've mentioned, or some of the findings that I've mentioned, it is of concern to us that the organizational culture at the SABC, in our view, was not one which promoted good ethical conduct, was not one that necessarily promoted preventing a culture of impunity, was not one that promoted adherence to policies and providing almost an indication of leading by example. So we just had a look at the status of suspension of employees in the SABC. Now, what we found that over the period April 2006 to August 2009, that there were about 34 employees that were suspended on full pay. And on average, they were suspended for periods of longer than 10 months on full pay. In fact, there was two employees who were suspended for up to 39 months. And this was of concern because I think the Auditor General has really expanded on the issue of taking decisive action in order to address transgression. And this is an area which does not reflect that. So as the AG has also mentioned, we have made a number of recommendations throughout the report on each and every section. But in summary, they do highlight the issues of strengthening quality management information and reporting. They do highlight strengthening effective governance arrangements. In other words, also reacting to where concerns are raised. And they specifically highlight enhancing or the need for enhancing the adequacy of leadership oversight. Leadership need to monitor what's going on. They need to take strong action about what's going on. And they need to act decisively in directing the operations of the SABC. We've also made specific recommendations about disciplinary actions, about considering legal proceedings against individuals who have now exited the SAPC, so they're no longer in the employ of SAPC, and also about reviewing of policies and frameworks which have not, some of them have not been reviewed for many years, and which require a revamp to ensure that they actually mitigate serious risks that have been identified, and the AGIS elucidated on one specific high risk, but there are other risks as well, and also with a view to strengthening the internal controls at the SAPC. See, I think it will also be remiss of us not to specifically mention that the investigation was not an easy investigation from the point of view that it was not always easy to access complete information or get the right information for that matter. And had it not been for the interim board, and specifically the chair of the interim board, who made it her daily task to assist us wherever she could with the information that we needed, I think we would have been in a position where we would have reported to the committee today with far less information and a lot more limitations. So we just want from the team side, from the general side, express our gratitude for that. I think at the same time highlight that there's a risk with information management as well. Chair, I think I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, AG's office. Members, I want to suggest that we adjourn now and we reconvene at 12 o'clock. As you know, that we've got to go to the emergency caucus. So, and a memorial service. So we will come back to this room at 12 o'clock to receive a preliminary response from the interim board to this particular report. Thank you, then.